Strength for the Journey. Thanks for joining us again. Strength for the Journey is a radio program designed to strengthen the believer for the days that lie ahead. We have a website at strength4thejourney.com. That's strengthforthejourney.com. This is radio program number 62 if you're listening by shortwave radio. Today I have a very special friend in the studio with me that's going to join me on this program. His name is Mark Evans, and he's been a very, very close friend of mine for about 2.5 years here in Panama. And we met about 2.5 years ago. He was in the business of selling gold and silver here. He started a company called Gold Silver Panama. He's probably one of the most brilliant minds, economic minds, I've ever met in my life. And I've just been a real, it's been a real privilege to be his friend. And we have shared a lot of times together here, and we've grown a lot together in the Lord as the Lord's been teaching us out of our comfort zone. And Mark had to leave his comfort zone here about 2.5 years ago as well. And this is where real change takes place. But Mark, thanks for joining us today.
I'm delighted to be here.
So Mark has been battling cancer for the last 6 months or so, and it is a battle. It is a journey that Mark has walked through, but he's never been closer to the Lord right now in his life than his entire life. And sometimes God takes us through unlikely channels to get us close to him. And Mark, I just want you to I'm going to just open it up for you to share from your heart of what God has done with you in the last 2.5 years and the journey that was an unlikely journey. You didn't know really where you were going when you came here, but God did. And he's transformed your life in many, many ways.
He has. I mean, he has led and directed me, opened doors, closed doors. And one thing that stood out real prominent with me is, as we go through our spiritual journey, we grab a certain my life verse. And it used to be Jeremiah 7:19, the heart is desperately, deceitful above all things, desperately wicked, who could know it? And I thought that applied to me because I could rationalize, justify, excuse, explain anything. And so I didn't trust myself or anybody else because that's our natural condition. And, given half a chance, we will relapse. We always do. There is no status quo. But I've had other verses, and some people, I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me. And if he be with me, who can be against me? But most recently, I have come to believe that my obedience to what he has said and revealed to me is more important than anything else, and that if you do the right thing, the results will follow. And so I go with a recurrent theme of tried, tested, and approved, and it's happened to every one of them. Like Abraham, he's 100 years old before he gets a son. He gets tested and promised. 75 years old, and then David and Joseph, and all the superstars and everything else, and every single one of them had to go through their trial and testing. Joshua was an intern and an assistant for 40 years and faithful in following God, and he just wants obedient servants. He doesn't judge people or choose people based on their resume. He chooses them based on their humility. That's another absolute non-discretionary, uncompromised theme. Is that you have to have a humble heart, and just somebody will follow instructions. And one person, well, Jesus Christ, for example, as many others, but certainly he'd be preeminent among those of the group. I am humble of spirit and meek and humble of spirit. So of the two things he could recommend himself and say about himself that distinguished himself and made him so exceptional, those are the two, and God only knows he could have chosen a lot. So that kind of has been kind of my theme here recently, is depending on God and trusting God.
Yeah, so it's just sometimes he gets us into a place where we can't trust in ourselves anymore. We realize that we don't have it in ourselves to make it. the duration or make the journey. So many of us have learned to rely upon ourselves, that if we don't get it done, it doesn't get done kind of thing. And I think, you know, when I realized what Jesus was really talking about when he said, unless you forsake all, you cannot be my disciple. We don't really understand what it really means to forsake all. We forsake a little bit. But what does it really mean to forsake all? And I think part of that is a trust in ourselves. I think of the scripture says, trust in the Lord with all of your heart and lean not unto your own understanding. In all of your ways, acknowledge me and I will direct your path. And I think the word all, it's inclusive of everything, exclusive of nothing. So it's everything, all. And we don't really understand that all until we get where we have nothing. And, you know, when your health is beyond the doctor's repair, you start really realizing how much all really means to trust in him and everything. And I think the stripping version that God does sometimes in our life is the most dependent version of us, that we're so dependent upon God because we have nothing. And I remember when I came here, I was sitting there thinking to myself, you know, I had nothing. I literally felt like I was stripped to the bone and planted on planet Mars. You know, nobody spoke my language, and I'm just sitting here so vulnerable. My whole family, myself, and I said, God, if you don't feed me, I'm going to die. And I heard him speak back to me. He said, good, now you're where I want you. And I realized, what does it take for us to get to that place, if you don't feed me, I'm going to die place in our life? And that's the best place we can ever go, is in that place where we're totally dependent upon him and not leaning unto our own understanding. It's like, okay, now I can show up. Now you're where I want you. Now I can be God in your life. And I know that's where he is right now in your life. He is God.
Well, he is. The thing is that you can give it up. We can be proactive or passive. We can give it up, or he can take it from us. Going back to what I meant to say is that one of my favorite new verses is what David said is, before my infirmity, I went astray. And I have found I'm less likely to do that. I'm not inclined to do it. My whole values, and it says you be transformed by the renewing of your mind and you become a new creature. And I would say my transformation has exceeded anything I could have imagined or expected. I'm reaping harvests that I didn't even know I sowed. It's just inexplicable to me, but it goes back to the obedience. See, God's got principles. You know, we all understand and recognize mathematics and thermodynamics and physics and things about wavelengths and light and power and energy and electromagnetism, all these kinds of things. We don't question it. You know what? It doesn't matter if you believe it. If you believe there's a God, if you follow it, understand it, you will live by it, period. Okay, so I have come to believe that when God created everything, he created everything in its entirety, perfectly integrated, interdependent, absolutely flawless from beginning to end, top to bottom, front to back, side to side, and everything. And so I've kind of expanded my idea of God's plan and his principles and his rules. And it's not just math, you know, but he also has them for financial things. He has them as far as, you know, stewardship of our time, our relationships, and so on. And if we dig, you know, it goes back, it's real simple. Ask, seek, and knock. And knock, you know, ask, seek, and knock. So it's a real simple acronym, and it starts with ask. And if you pursue that, you know, all these things will be added unto you. So as time has gone by, I've become more absolutely unequivocal and absolute, non-negotiable in my subscription and practice and passion for truth and following those things. And then the rewards he promises, you get to see it happen. And it is real, and it'll come from places you don't expect or least expected. When I came here, I left everything. I brought a suitcase and I brought a computer, and then I pursued, you know, my business and certain kinds of ministries, involvement in church and things like that. And it was just stuff I liked to do. I had lots of time. I had enough money and those kinds of things. So I just kind of went and did what the Spirit directed me or how He led me and so on. So I've met, you know, fabulous people you know, the business prospered. But I've never had so many friends and such the quality of relationships, my own personal change as far as detachment. Detachment is so hard for us, you know, letting things go. This is a treasure and, you know, I don't want to give this thing up and that thing up and everything. And a lot of times God does that. He'll want you to give it up or He will give you that challenge and He will do it just as a test. And off the top of my head, I can't think of one now, but I know He's done it before in the Old Testament. He makes these proposals just to test. And then like He did with Solomon, well, because you didn't ask for long life and because you didn't ask for wealth and riches and so on, and because you didn't ask for the destruction of your enemies and all this kind of stuff, I'm not only going to give you the knowledge, wisdom, and understanding you requested, I'm going to give you the other stuff, pressed down, shaken together, and spilling over beyond what you could have imagined or expected. So He doesn't take it or require it, but sometimes He will propose, make the proposal and see what you do with it. That's the try, test, and approve. And so we know that He's exceedingly generous and you can't outgive God. And we know that if you lend to, if you give to the poor, you lend to God. They're real simple principles. God loves a cheerful giver, and your money and your stuff isn't yours to begin with. Otherwise, you got the wrong mindset, and you can't love God and the world too. So my experience has been the closer and the more more closely I followed Him on all levels in all things and actually act as if I believe what He said, the blessings are beyond what I would have or could have chosen for myself because I don't have good enough judgment to do that. And it's exceeded my expectations. But the thing is, it's not important to me. Now that, you know, I don't care about the stuff and the treasures of the world and those kinds of things, and I have detached from them, when they do come, I can be really grateful, but I don't have an expectation, you know, that I must have these things, and it's easy come, easy to go. So I can appreciate them, but that's not the objective, the goal. My happiness, fullness, contentment, satisfaction is not dependent on that, but I can still be really grateful to God and feel exceedingly blessed. In fact, I've often said that I'm, well, it just escaped me, what I was going
to
say.
What I was going to share is that something that happens when you finally, when you take the step, the first step of leaving and forsaking, it's very difficult to leave, like what you mentioned, your treasures and all your stuff, things that your heart has grown fond of. You know, the Lord is looking for somebody that really loves Him. And I think if you really analyze what really goes on with our walk with the Lord is He wants somebody who loves Him. Sure, He loves us, but would you marry somebody just because you love them? What if they didn't really love you? What if they're really, their whole motive for loving you is because they wanted your stuff? Say you're a rich man, and they figured, I get this guy, you know, I get all the goodies too. What if the motive was, that was really simply your motive? And I start thinking about how when the Lord said give, expecting nothing in return, and your reward shall be great. You know, He's really always looking at our motives. He's always checking our motives. What are you really doing this for? Why are you really following me? What do you want? And I believe what He's really wanting out of us is He's wanting a pure heart with pure motives and a love that's not dependent upon little goodies that are attached. We're not supposed to be horses with this little carrot dangling out in front of us. He wants us to love Him whether we get anything. You know, it's like so many people today, I've had a friend of mine said, you know, I wonder what they're going to be thinking as they go to that moment between the time they die and the time they stand before that. Well, Lord, is it a 4-bedroom or 5-bedroom mansion? You know, I can't wait to see, you know what I mean? You know, or are they going to be on their face, woe is me, you know, Lord, you know, forgive me, beating their chest, Lord, a sinner. I mean, how? Where's our heart? Are we so lifted up in pride that we think that we're due something? You know, I think about some of the people that, and I was reading this about the 10 lepers. You know, there's only one that came back and fell at his feet. All the other nine just went, hoo-hoo, baby, I'm healed. I can go live the life I never could before.
Yes.
You know, I get to live my own life now. And I kind of wonder if that's a demonstration of 90% of Christians today, is when they get delivered and they get set free, they go on to live their own life. Only 10% only comes and falls at his feet. And I just kind of wonder, what are the real ratios of people who really serve the Lord, and how many are just playing games, really living for themselves?
Well, I don't know. I personally think it's not very high, but they are the losers, and they don't know. See, unless you give it up or are willing to give it up and then see what God requires of you, you're not going to know the blessing. Oh, yeah. The blessing was always acting on faith, you know, going into the promised land, crossing the Red Sea, or you know, when they were commanded to go back to, you know, like Abraham and Jesus had to go back to Egypt. If you just follow them, then you get to find out.
That's right.
You know, because we live by commandments and promises, not by explanations. And God says, do this, do that, and so on.
And the perfect example is, look at Abraham.
And it's for your welfare.
And it's for your benefit. But he does want the benefit that he gives us to be to our destruction and to our demise. And many people, if they got the blessing without having the character to receive the blessing would be their curse and not their blessing. And I was just thinking, you know, what came to my mind as you're talking is Abraham, okay? Abraham gets up early in the morning. Now, that would be one morning that you probably want to sleep in when you're going to, you're required to sacrifice your son, you know?
Right.
He got up early in the morning. He headed up the mountain. And he had such faith. He said, well, he tells the guys that he's leaving, hey, we're going to come back and we'll see you again. You know, we, not just I, but we will come back again. So he had such faith that God was in total charge of everything. But it was interesting that when he had his hand above his son with a knife in his hand, getting ready to fulfill the sacrifice, that is when the angel of the Lord said, now I know. Now that you, thou, I know that you fear God and you have not withheld your only begotten son.
Right.
And he said, and that was at the point that he turned around and the ram was caught in a thicket. See, the blessing, the provision was after the obedience that was there. And most everybody wants, it's like people that maybe God's calling to go to another nation, minister to another nation. And they're saying, you know, and God's saying, leave and I'll show you. They're going, show me and I'll leave. They want to see the provision before they ever step out in faith. And it's not faith at all.
He had to be tested before he was approved. And he passed the test. I mean, he had the knife drawn and everything else. One thing I've always, you know, kind of surprised me is I think Isaac's role in this is like profoundly underappreciated, because this is a young man, 20 years old. Dad's 120. He's carrying his own wood. And you know, it's like Jesus carrying his own cross, and he's saying, "Hey, Dad, where's that sacrifice you're talking about?" And then he lets him bind him. You know, he could have overpowered his dad, run away, whatever. And so I think Isaac's conduct in this whole thing is pretty remarkable as well. He had as much faith as his dad, and he's the one with his life on his line. Yeah. I know that. I believe that Abraham would have treasured his son's life as much as his own. I would have no doubt about that. But that wasn't the case.
That's right. So Isaac was actually showing just as much faith as his father going with him.
Absolutely. You know, it's like the pig and the chicken say, hey, let's have bacon and eggs. The chicken says, let's have bacon and eggs for breakfast. And the pig says, that's easy for you to say. You're making a contribution. For me, it's a real sacrifice.
That's true. So, you know, we don't really understand the sacrifice we don't understand the purpose of the sacrifice or even the provision behind it until we actually go through it. You know, I can look back now and I, you know, even when I first started to learn to hear the Lord's voice, you know, it wasn't unless I had obeyed the voice that I thought was the Lord, that the voice was confirmed it was the Lord. See, if I had disobeyed the voice that I felt, you know, I feel like God's telling me to do this, I would never have known if it really was God, because I never known the fruit of the obedience of me obeying what I thought was God's voice. But it was in the obedience that I learned to hear God's voice and know it was Him when He's speaking to me. And this is, I think, where many people miss the connection of learning to hear God's voice. And the biggest thing is, I know, like now more than ever in our lives, that we need to be sensitive to know what we heard from God. Because some of the decisions that we all need to make today in these days are very critical to our future and our destiny. Maybe financially, maybe in a location, maybe in a job. Maybe we need to know it's not just, we're not just following what we think is the blessing. We need to know it's God's voice that we're following. The blessing will follow in your obedience, but we can't go just because, oh, I have a job offer here. Is this your job offer? Is this what you want? You know, I've had times when I bought a car or I put a deposit on a vehicle, and after I put the deposit on it, the Lord spoke to me and said, that one's not for you. And
you didn't ask first.
I didn't ask first, exactly. So it was I didn't put myself in a position to submit. And this is something I want to kind of use the last little bit. We have about 7 minutes left on the program.
There are a couple of things I wanted to point out to people. Because I am going through cancer. I mean, I have that, and I'm pretty shot, actually. But a couple of things that I learned from this is, one of them is what I call the moment of truth, the day of reckoning. Okay, you go in, and then they say, well, you got a little problem here. Let's do a biopsy. There's your moment of truth. Do you wring your hands, and do you start going through the grief process? Oh, God, remove this cup from me. Make it, you know, all better. And because we like a pain-free life, and we don't like change to begin with, but then things like that, where it turns your world upside down. So you accept that and you trust God with the outcome, or do you start right away just panicky and full of fear and anxiety and things like that? And then you get the biopsy, says, oh, by the way, it's malignant. Okay, so how do you react to that? God can, and I will attest to this, give you perfect peace in whatever circumstance you find yourself. And then if we look at the promise, our home isn't here. Our treasure isn't here. Our reward isn't here. Jesus Christ isn't here. We still have tears. We still have fear. We still have sin. This is not the perfect world. We are ambassadors at best, and we're tourists at worst. And all of us go through this. So I want to encourage people, you know, concentrate on the promises. Another thing that I've gone through is I've had numerous setbacks. You know, you start out, and I go to this treatment thing, and then I have this phantom internal bleeding, and so then I've got to get some transfusions. It's one thing after another. Then I can't swallow, and then I get pneumonia. I get pleurisy 3 days apart. Then I start getting seizures, and so I keep having these false dawns. It's like whack-a-mole, and it's like not even a week goes by, and it's been going on for months. So it gets kind of discouraging. It's painful, unpleasant, all that kind of thing. But the point is, in my past life, the way I was, I would say, what the hell is going on here? You know, I've given up sugar. I've given up cigarettes. I've given up, I can't even eat anymore. You know, when does this end? And, you know, enough already. And that's how I would have reacted. I haven't reacted that way at all, ever, through this whole process, regardless of the pain, discomfort, and disappointment, frustration. And I wouldn't change it for anything because of my own spiritual growth, that reinforced, forced dependence on God. Oh, God, I can't have a bowel movement without you. Oh, I can't eat. I can't swallow. I can't, you know, the simplest things. So it's galvanized and strengthened my dependence and relationship with Him. And I wouldn't trade it at all, ever.
You know, this is where I think the Lord, sometimes he says he maketh me lie down in green pasture. Sometimes we're forced into a position that we have no place to turn but him. And that is sometimes our the most comforted and comforting place, to know that you're in his arms, you're under the shadow of the Almighty, because you put yourself there. Now, our biggest problem is that our rebellion takes us out from underneath that umbrella of his shadow. And he's just a loving Father that wants us to come underneath him, trust him. And that's really what it's all about, is trusting his character, his nature, who he is. What kind of daddy is he? He's a loving daddy, and this is the kind of dad that we need to know who he is, so we trust him, that he's got our best interest in mind, even in the worst of scenarios. And I know that this is where your heart is now. It's like, I have no place else to go. You know, it's like when Jesus turned around to the 12, when all the disciples left him in chapter 6 of John, And he said, are you going to leave me too? Peter goes, well, where else are we going to go? Only you have the words of life. Yes. You know, this is where I find that we got to burn the ship in the harbor, man. We have no place else to go. We've made this one-way trip, and we have no place to go. You know, only he has the words of life.
Yeah, but he changes as the circumstances could be grim. And, you know, Paul is writing Ephesians in a jail, and he's all kinds of encouragement and singing and praising God, transforming lives with his testimony and his joy. Well, that's just not normal human behavior. Betsy Ten Boom said, she knows it's all unjust and unfair and reasonable, all this bad stuff in a concentration camp. I'm not even Jewish. What's this about? And she didn't say, make it go away, make it better. No, she said, God, teach me to live in this place. Well, in my case, and in all of our cases, it should be, if we have those really difficult times, we're supposed to appeal to him. You know, make your request known with prayer and supplication. And, you know, God, I do that all the time now. I didn't have to, didn't used to anyway. God, I don't know how to do this. This is so far over my head and out of my depth. I cannot do this. Help me to do this, because I have no frame of reference or experience to use.
You know, one thing, we got about 2 minutes left here, but I just wanted you to maybe just quickly share the power of submission in your life, that maybe just a quick testimony of just when you came to the point where you submitted to a pastor of authority, a place of authority, and the changes that took place once you made that decision.
Well, the thing is that I've been, you know, fiercely independent, self-sufficient, never request. I was kind of like the go-to guy, not the needy guy, and that suited me just fine. So anyway, I was going to rent a car, have my daughter drive it. I was going to drive it around. And an older man, good friend of mine, says, you're not going to do that. You don't know how weak you are and everything, and trust me on this. So I just said, okay, Vic, you know, I'll just go with that. And then the pastor said, look, I want you to, it's Thanksgiving, and I want you to give your testimony and everything else. And so I was flip-flopping and, you know, thinking about what I should do. And I finally consented, but he expected me to do that. Anyway, I did that because I said there's spiritual authority. And so since he asked that of me, I'm just going to do it, even though I can't stand speaking in public or attention or any of that. And so I just followed that. And then another case. There are several recent occasions where I just submitted to, you know, wiser counsel and authority.
And maybe we'll do another program on that, because I think that's another program even in its entirety on the power of submission and the what happens in our life when we do come to that place in our life when we finally submit to authority, because we are some of the most rebellious people and we don't realize how rebellious we are until we get to that place where someone we need to submit. But thank you again for joining us on Strength for the Journey. Again, our website is strength with 4thejourney.com, and we'll see you next time. I will be